This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. How does the relationship change when the person calling you mom or dad becomes an adult? How does the relationship change with parents when you become an adult child? Those are the questions we take up this afternoon. Our guest is Jane Isay. She is the author of Walking on Eggshells, Navigating the Delicate Relationship Between Adult Children and Parents. Let me share with you an excerpt from the book. Fights and reconciliations, pain and joy are the stuff of human existence. Expectations not met, feelings hurt, serious mistakes by everybody. What else is life? The interesting question is how to stay connected through the hard times and maintain the balance between closeness and distance that works for you. Most important is to make sure that the bonds don't break. That from Jane Isay's book, Walking on Eggshells. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments about adult children and parents. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Jane Isay has been an editor for over 40 years. In 2004, she left her job as editor-in-chief at Harcourt Trade Books to write. Walking on Eggshells is the result. It is her first book, and it is available in paperback from Flying Dolphin Press, a division of Broadway Books. Jane Isay is the mother of two grown sons. She lives not far from them and their children in New York City. You can learn more about our guest, Jane Isay, at her website, www.janeisay.com, or at the website, www.walkingoneggshellsbook.com. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Jane, it's so good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm just great. And thank you for reading that excerpt. It sounds better than I think it was.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's wonderful. I really like this book. I think families should immediately head out to the bookstore right after this interview and pick it up.
Oh, thank you.
This book, you say, began with a surprise and a discovery. What were they?
Well, the surprise was that my children wanted to be as close to me as I wanted to be to them, even though we were on good terms. Everybody wanted to be more at ease and more relaxed and have more fun together. And so that was the surprise. The eureka moment came when I was talking with my girlfriends, all of whom had kids in their 20s and 30s, and everybody was having the same pain and trouble, and we all thought we were the only person to have that trouble. Well, as a book editor, let me tell you, if everybody is having a problem and everybody thinks nobody but them has it, you've got a book there. And so I decided to go out and travel the country. I interviewed over 70 people, parents and grown kids, and I learned, I just had the most amazing information I got from everybody.
Yeah. Were there overarching themes in those interviews and conversations?
Yeah, well, the most astonishing and gratifying theme came from the grown kids. They love us. You remember Sally Fields, "You like me, you really like
me."
Well, they love us. They really love us. And I found this, every grown child I interviewed in their 20s and 30s and 40s, even if they were estranged from their parents, even if, as in the case of one woman, she and her mom traded the meanest voicemail messages, they love us. And they're grateful for the sacrifices their parents made. And many of them even said they were grateful for the gift of life. Now, this was a big surprise to me and a big surprise to many of the parents I told about it, because we hear their anger, their irritation as lack of love. In fact, it's not lack of love. It's the need for some distance.
So the bonds between the parents and adult children you spoke with, healthy or mixed bag or unhealthy?
Well, you know, I'm just an editor, so I can't use words like healthy.
Okay.
But what I can say is that there's a lot of misunderstanding on both sides of the generation. You know, it's either a tiny crack in the sidewalk or it's the size of the Grand Canyon. It depends on the family. But the there is so much goodwill between the generations, even when it's not expressed. And the question is, how do you get over your guilt and your anger and your sorrow on both sides of the generation gap so that you can begin to appreciate each other for the failed, you know, kind of dumpy, not perfect human beings we all are.
Yeah. Well, how do you take a look at the nest and take a look at what kind of eggshells you have in there and go about sweeping them away?
Well, you know, the first thing is really to look at, you know, that psychology says, and I'm not a psychologist, but I read a lot, it says you can't change other people, you can only change yourself. And so what we need to do, certainly as parents, is we need to look at the relationships with our kids and see the extent to which we've contributed to the difficulties. We can't really tell that until we have a pretty good idea of what they're thinking. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to try to help people to see what the younger generation is thinking. Mm. And it was through all my interviews with the grown kids that I found, for instance, how allergic they are to advice.
Mm.
In my book, I say they don't like it, they resent it, they won't hear it, just don't give it. There are a lot of parents, when I speak around the country, a lot of parents say, what do you mean? I've got to give. I see them going out with the wrong person. I've got to tell them. To which I have now come to reply, they know what you're thinking anyway. Which, of course, is true.
Yeah.
They've been watching us since they were born. That's how they grow. And you know perfectly well that if you call your parent, your mom or your dad, or if you get a call from a child, they can tell how you're feeling by your voice. Sometimes I'm in a bad mood. One of my kids calls, and the first words out of their mouth is, are you okay, Mom? Mm. You know? They can tell whether I like the girlfriend. I don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
So a lot of that, a lot of that interaction of cut your hair, I don't like him, you making the wrong decision, a lot of that is a holdover from when we really did need to tell our children what we thought because we were raising them.
Mm.
And many parents think that they need to continue that. And that really just doesn't. And what kids do is they just kind of move away.
Yeah. At the same time, though, sometimes we ask for that advice and then we go, oh, we're sorry we asked for it.
Well, sure. Yes. And the truth of the matter is that if you ask for the advice, you're stuck with it. On the other hand, one of the wise women I interviewed in the book said, when they ask you for advice, don't solve their problem. Just say, well, maybe you might think about it this way, or have you considered? And one woman told me her husband was considered the wisest man in the family because when asked for advice, he said, well, what do you think?
Mm.
So, And so, I mean, there's a back and forth. One of the great stories I heard recently, a woman I know, her 36-year-old daughter went to visit her with her 3-year-old, and they were making dinner, and the daughter was slicing the carrots. And the mom said, honey, do you think you could slice the carrots on a bias here? Well, she blew up. Don't tell me how to make carrots. I know I've been cutting carrots for a long time. Later after dinner, they were sitting in the living room, and her daughter turned to her and said, Mom, when do you think I should have my next child? And the mother roared with laughter and said, you screamed at me over carrots. I'm not talking about when you have your next child.
Oh.
So it's back and forth.
Yeah. Are there stages in the separation of parents and children?
I think that's a wonderful question. There are, and I think the most surprising stage is the 20s, which in the book I call them the gotta-go generation.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up the phone to call you, and you're just getting into the good part of the conversation. They say, gotta go, and hang up. They ask for advice and never take it. They come home for a few days and drop dirty laundry in the living room and expect to be treated like adults.
Yeah.
But that is really, it's a new stage of development, according to some major psychologists, and there's a lot of studies going on about this. It's called extended adolescence. And what they're finding is that people in their 20s are much slower to make the decisions to commit themselves to the kinds of decisions people of my generation made in our 20s. And I heard it from many of the people I interviewed. Women would say, I'm 24. By the time my mother was my age, she had all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm 26, and by the time my dad was my age, he already knew what he was going to do for the rest of his life, and I'm still a waiter.
Yeah.
So they are aware that they're not meeting the milestones. And it when kids feel guilty or that they're not doing what we hope for them, that's very hard on them, and they tend to be a little angry or a little defiant because they're thinking about how they've all their failings. And then what happens to the parents is that we, because of how we grew up, we expect our kids are going to be totally self-sufficient in their 20s. After all, we had them when we were in our 20s. And we are surprised that they are not, that they're still floating in the world.
Mm.
And we blame ourselves. This is a very important thing to know. Parents blame themselves for everything that goes wrong with their grown children.
Stop.
Yeah. You know, where did I go wrong, you say?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have found that I need to say when I speak or when I'm on the radio is forgive yourself, and then maybe you'll give your kids a break.
Hmm.
You know, you did the best you could. We all did. And there are things that we can do to repair relationships by owning up to the places where we think we failed our kids.
Yeah.
And kids, too. I mean, the back and forth of love and reconciliation, a lot of it involves apology and recognition.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the book, you write about the conversations that you and your sons have had.
Yes.
Some difficult ones, but very worthwhile discussions.
Yes.
You were essentially ridding the nest of the eggshells.
Right.
And it was wonderful to read the give and take between each of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was your son Josh who said, "Well, yeah, let's pick it up and move on."
Yeah. Well, that was one of the great moments of my life. I was apologizing again, and mm-hmm. he said, "Mom, we've all suffered enough. Let's get on with it."
Yeah.
And we did. And we have. But that takes it. You know, I couldn't have had that conversation with him if I hadn't done the research and for the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was only by finding out how many people, from the wise and from the suffering, how many people had worked so hard to figure out what was separating them and done what they thought was necessary to build the bridge that I had the courage to try that with Josh.
Mm.
Do you have time for another story about this?
We do, but maybe could we hold that one?
Sure.
And then we'll take a listener call.
Good.
Okay. Jane Isay is our guest this afternoon. She's the author of Walking on Eggshells, Navigating the Delicate Relationship Between Adult Children and Parents. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments, your story, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's go to the toll-free line. A listener in Paxton on line 4. Hi.
Hi, Celeste. Thanks for taking my call. Very
sure.
Interesting conversation. Just a couple of quick comments, and I'll go ahead and ring off and let your guest comment. It was amusing to hear your guest talk because I think there's been a number of articles written about parents. They can't get rid of their 20-somethings. They keep coming back, and they keep coming back. And I'm just wondering how much of this does your guest think is driven by economics? I'm in my 50s and been married and kids and everything. And I can remember when I was out of college in my 20s, I kind of went through a vagabond area and, dropped everything, went out west, worked at a ski resort for a couple of years. It was wonderful. I just had myself to take care of. But I don't know if the kids have that same latitude anymore because of the changes in the economic situation. And then finally, I've got a niece, a very delightful young lady who's 27 and does not have feel any need or urgency as far as getting married or what have you. And I read a statistic was just terrifying as far as how unfair if you're a single female and you're reaching 30, chances of getting married are, I think you're better getting hit by a shark in the middle of a cornfield in Illinois. And just was wondering about those things, and if you guys wanted to comment on any of that. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Those are two very interesting points. I think it's true that kids are coming back home and depending more on their parents financially because of the difficulties of being able to support yourself on income or on a salary or on tips the way so many of the older generation did. And I also think that kids are used to living better than even we were, and we boomers grew up in a time of plenty. So I think those are issues having to do with, I think it's harder to take a vagabond year, or you have to really like sleeping in your car, which I don't think many kids want to do anymore. As to the 27-year-old niece, I think I have read in the New York Times that those probabilities of finding somebody, for a woman finding somebody to marry over 27 or over 30, are so, the probability is so little. I think that is based on a false premise. It's not the case.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's a bit of how to lie with statistics.
Yeah. And, you know, you can be perfectly happy and unmarried.
Sure. Sure, and that's another part of it. A lot of people, another reason that they're not finding somebody or committing so quickly is that they know they've seen divorce all around them. So they're not even guaranteed, they don't even think finding the love of your life will necessarily guarantee you being together for your life.
Yeah. And there are also, I think, there's some urgency, and maybe this goes back to the economic question, mm-hmm. but there's some urgency of getting your working life established.
That's true, but in the same way as with your love life, people growing up today and going to work do not have the same faith in the corporations that perhaps we did, so that they are looking longer and harder to find what it is that they want to do or that they can commit to because they know that there's not a whole lot of sectors of American business and even government that will really commit to the workers the way they used to.
Yeah. On the upside of the children being closer to family for a longer period of time, it seems to me that there could be some good things coming out of that. I mean, not that, you know, the laundry winds up on the living room floor or, you know, that there's no effort to get out there and get a job, that kind of thing. But you know, a friend of mine works a great deal with students here at the U of I, 18 and 19-year-olds, and he says that the students on campus today seem to have a stronger bond with their parents than we did once we left home. And he says, you know those kids that are you see talking on their cell phone on the corner waiting for the bus? He said, so many of them are talking to their parents.
Yes. And that's a great thing. And what has happened really since from the boomer generation down, each generation is getting closer and more comfortable being with their families. I grew up the daughter. I'm a little older than the baby boom, but I was the daughter of the greatest generation, and they were much more authoritarian than I was with my kids. And they had lived through wars and depression, and they knew what was good for us, and they were going to be sure that we followed their lead. I did what we were told. And I don't think it was so much out of a need to control as out of a sense of, I need to take care of you. Whereas now, the closeness between parents and kids in college, for instance, is much more complete. On the other hand, when they get to the point where they need to separate and go be their own people, it can be more painful. And that's why this 20-something, the gotta-go generation is so important to know about, because many people have written my website, for instance, to say, I'm so relieved. I thought I was the only person whose kid wasn't returning my calls. And the closer you are growing up, the harder it is to separate to the extent you need to get your own autonomy. But once that autonomy is set and the boundaries are clear, then the door opens for a real kind of loving closeness for the rest of your lives.
This change, do you think in part we owe it to a greater role of men in being fathers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I think fathers are playing a much bigger role in their children's lives. In my generation, the role of the dad was to put food on the table and work, 12 hours a day and be very tired and go to bed. But as down the generations, the fathers are much more involved. It's key. On the other hand, you can have difficulties in families with the mom or the dad. One of the things I found much more of than I expected was drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol really can harm these relationships because parents out of control are just not good for kids. And as they grow up, they want to get away. And that makes it harder. Unless I found a number of cases where the parents, they got better. And they got off the alcohol, they went on some kind of medication, and even though they had behaved very poorly to their children when they were small, they were welcomed back as dad or mom by their grown children.
Mm. A lot of room for forgiveness then.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you understand, and it really takes a lot of work in your heart to understand that there is real love there. Forgiveness and becoming a better person, I think both of the repentance and becoming a better person, they're both they stand much more firmly if you understand that there's love that you're standing on.
Yeah. One of the things that you say at the outset of the chapter, The Song of Love, is it's almost impossible to stop loving your parents and even more difficult to stop loving your children.
Yeah. And it's true. And the other part of it for the parents is that you never stop worrying about them either. And that's okay. And my kids are grown and well and everything is terrific. But if I'm having trouble falling asleep, I can stay up all night worrying about them. And that's just part of being a mom. One of the chapters in my book starts off with a little conversation. Put on your sweater, dear. It's cold. Mom, I'm 60. I'm still your mom.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in the last 10 or 15 years, a generation of us has been led to believe that when your kids grow up, you're supposed to be like the French army, kiss them on both cheeks, shake their hand, and send them away.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
No. No. In that chapter, The Song of Love, we meet some really interesting families. You want to tell us about one of them?
I'd love to. I think the family I want to tell you about is the family, her name is Tina. This is a woman I had heard she got along very well with. She had the most wonderful parents, and they got along famously. I mean famously. I heard about her from a lot of people, and so I was thrilled when she agreed to talk with me. And she told me about her parents, and they are terrific. Her dad and mom were always wonderful parents. And they're so close now, even though she's grown and she's got two little girls, 8 and 12, that her mom has a key to her house and she's welcome anytime. And she told me all kinds of wonderful stories. The grandparents take the two little girls for a quote-unquote vacation week. All they do is go to their house 10 miles away, and the girls get to do whatever they want, go to the mall, get their toes done, whatever. It's the best vacation they can have. And as we were finishing the conversation, Tina said, I had turned off my tape recorder. She said something, and the sentence was, my brother died. And I said, wait a minute, you had a brother? And she said, yes, he was killed in the car accident the week I graduated from college, she said. And I came home. I drove home immediately from college. She said, and as I drove onto our street, I saw my father throw himself on the ground in pain. And she said to me, at that moment, I hoped and prayed that I would never feel the pain that my father felt for my brother's death. But I knew that I had to be a grown child now. And she was enrolled in graduate school, and she was going to live in the dormitory, but she canceled living in the dormitory and commuted so that she could stay home with her parents, just so that they wouldn't be alone.
Hmm.
And she, in that moment, she grew up. She saw her parents no longer as the tall, the giants with megaphones for mouths. She saw them as people in pain. And the major job that we need to do of growth, both as parents of grown children and as children, grown children of middle-aged parents, is to begin to see each other for who we are, for the good-hearted but flawed people. Our children need to see us as getting not being as young as we used to be and, you know, kind of silly and foolish in ways. They need to get a sense of humor about us, too. I don't, the beans I make at Thanksgiving, they're never very good. But now we laugh about my beans.
Yeah.
And by the same token, we need to begin to see our kids for who they are, not who we want them to be.
Yeah.
And that's all anybody wants out of life, I believe, is to be seen for who you are.
Yeah.
And this was a case, Tina got that vision through the tragedy of her brother's death. Mm-hmm. And my point is, tragedy is a great teacher. We know that. But perhaps we don't have to wait for tragedy to learn to begin to accept each other and give up some of the sense of responsibility we feel for what we have no control over as parents. And then it would be very nice if our kids started forgiving us for all the things that they hold against us. Recently, one of my kids said to me, "Mom, you really made a mistake sending me to that camp when I was 13. I said, "I apologized before, honey. What was I? We offered to take you home. Why didn't you come?" He said, "I knew I had to tough it out." Well, there you are.
Oh. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Jane Isay. She is the author of Walking on Eggshells, Navigating the Delicate Relationship Between Adult Children and Parents. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions, comments, stories. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, speaking of past hurts and slights, would you tell us the story of Melanie and her children, in particular, her daughter, Julia?
This is the money story, right?
Yep.
Well, money is a big issue. One of the things that we need to know as parents is that our kids are keeping...
Keeping score.
They have their little audit books. Maybe they have it on Excel because it's now the computer era. They know what we've given each of them, and they're counting it up. And this is the story of Melanie, who her daughter and family wanted to redo the basement of their apartment, of their house. And she and Melanie's a widow. She lives on a fixed income. She has a little bit of money saved. So she loaned her daughter the money, but then the loan from the bank didn't come through, and the daughter asked her to forgive the loan. And Melanie said she couldn't because she needed the money to live, and her daughter threw a fit and said, "I had scholarships when I was in college, and you paid for my brother and sister's tuition, and you do this and you do that." And Melanie was shocked and very upset. And one of the things everybody needs to know is that mothers really don't want their children to be mad at them. Having a kid angry at you was just like having your heart in acid. So she relented, and she forgave the loan. And then when her daughter said they wanted to redo another room in the house, her heart froze. Well, that didn't come to pass, and it's somewhat relaxed over the years. But kids are watching how their parents spend their money. And there seems to be a divergence. There are the capitalists, I call them, who believe that you should give equal amounts to each of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the socialists who believe that you should give according to their need. And I think it's really important, however you are, whatever side you come down on, it's really important to talk it over with your grown kids and tell them what your philosophy is and how you're doing it. And make sure everybody's in the room at the same time, because if they're not, they're going to play telephone, and it's going to get very ugly.
Yeah. This story is also a story about the passage of responsibility from generation to generation. You point that out, and this is really important, too. have Melanie and her children come to grips with that part of the story?
Yes, they have.
Good.
And it's worked out. The passage, the worry that Melanie articulated was that she would become dependent. If she gave all her money to her kids, then she would be sooner more dependent on them. And that got itself worked out through the way life is, the way life happens. And still, Melanie takes most of her identity from being a mother and grandma, which gives her great joy.
Mm-hmm. As an adult child, and this is the case for myself and my brothers, mm-hmm. and then my husband and my sister-in-law, the issue of independence for aging parents is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Fearing for their safety, their well-being, and you've got a parent saying, I don't want to be a burden.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stay in my home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to move out of this house.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a thorny thicket.
It is, and it is terrible. And it's as if life comes, it's a boomerang. You know, you grow up, you want your parents out of your hair.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, let me make my decisions and don't give me advice.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps they listen, and then the boomerang comes and they need you. And they're saying, I need to make my own decisions. Dear, don't give me advice. I'm your mom. And then the grown children get to worry about their parents the way the parents worried about them. And I can tell you, this is not the subject of my book, but I can tell you that parents, as they get older, are as allergic to advice from their children as the grown children are from their parents. I think it is the case that we need to be very delicate with our parents as well. And there are wonderful books on the subject, most especially, I think, Mary Pfeiffer's book, Another Country,
mm-hmm.
which is about the relationship of people my age to their aging parents.
Yeah.
But it's tricky. I also think that one of the reasons it's important for the boomer generation to really have these comfortable relationships and easy back and forth with their kids is that when we get older and need you guys, that there will be a different kind of communication than there is with the older generation now.
Mm. Yeah, it was so tough with my mom because she just put me off, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, sort of the 911, if you will, came. And I got there as soon as I could. And, you know, she said, well, it's about time. I was like, oh, Mom.
Please.
I love you. But, gee.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very, and basically she was, there it is. It's in a nutshell what happens at that point. It's hard.
Yeah.
Nobody said that getting old was easy.
No. It's not for cowards.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I understand that you're working on a book about relationships between adult siblings. That will be very interesting. Where are you in that?
Well, I've completed the research. I've done about the same number, about 70 interviews, with people who have 1, 2, 3, and up to 9 siblings, all grown-ups, but again, from the ages of 20 to the age between 20 and 70. And it's very interesting because I'm going to start writing on come May 1st, what I'm finding is that in many families, the siblings aren't that close. They don't speak all the time and so on. But there's, the same need for relationship. And as we get older, when our kids are grown and when are out of the house and our parents are dead, then the only person who remembers the name of the first dog is your brother or sister.
Yeah.
They're very important relationships.
There's some eggshells there, but once you take care of them, I think it's
magic.
Better than ever.
Yeah, and everybody has to work on every relationship. There's no such thing as, this is the easiest thing in the world. If you're very close to your siblings, of course it takes less work. But certainly between parents and grown children, if you see a family where everybody is just getting along famously and nobody's ever thought about it or worked on it, you don't know the people very well.
Yeah.
And it's also true in many cases with brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Before we took our call earlier, mm-hmm. you were going to tell us another story, and I'm wondering, did it have something to do with the work that you and your sons did?
It had to do with repentance and forgiveness.
Okay.
It's somewhat different from the story with my sons, and it has to do with one of the magic sentences I've discovered that really can break down barriers between these generations. This is a story of a woman who, her father had been in the Vietnam War when she was a little girl, and he came back seriously emotionally damaged. They didn't know anything about post-traumatic stress at the time, but that's what he had. And he left his wife and little girl, and he was never there for her at all. And she was ready. She had a burning anger at this dad all her life. Until she's a journalist. She got herself embedded in Iraq, and she called home and said, "Hi, Dad, I'm in Iraq." He said, "Who is this?" Hmm. And she was very unhappy with him and very angry. And then she needed his help on a project, and she went to him for help, and he agreed. And at the end of their conversation, he said to her, "I'm so proud of you, hon." And she said, those words, "I'm so proud of you," melted all my years of anger, and what I saw was my dad, a man who had suffered most of his life, but I guess he always loved me.
Hmm.
That sentence, "I'm proud of you," is a sentence I suggest parents of grown kids choose to say, even if their kids haven't won the Nobel Prize or the Pulitzer. Praise for what is for your strengths is like Miracle-Gro. It really helps you get stronger. And on the other side, I've found the sentence moms want to hear most.
Yeah.
The phone rings and it's you, your kid, and you say hello, and your kid says, "Hi, Ma, how are you doing?"
Mm.
A conversation without an agenda is so appreciated. And very often that opens up the torrents of love that haven't been expressed because of this sense of separation.
Mm. So asking that question, "How you doing?" and really listening.
Yeah. And waiting until you have enough time actually to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe not just, I don't know, just frequent little calls like that, too.
Right, and you can also say, "Hi, Ma, I've only got a minute, but I wanted to hear your voice."
Mm.
I think one of the things that between these, particularly with everybody being so busy these days, the grown kids I interviewed knew that their parents wanted to have longer phone conversations than they could at the time, but they weren't sure how to get off the phone. So one wise woman said, when I talk to my very busy daughter, I say, "Hi, it's me. Do you have a minute?"
Mm-hmm.
And if she's busy, she says, "No, Mom, can I call you later?" And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the guilt that people feel for not being able to meet the desires of their parents or parents not to be able to do all their kids want from them. Guilt is a great separator, you know.
Yeah.
If you feel bad about something you've done, you just don't want to see that person.
Yeah.
And think of all the times, all the grown kids who feel they've disappointed their parents in a million different ways. It's a separator. And grown kids have that two great advantages. One is that they can move away or just distance themselves. And the other, if life is fair, they'll outlive us. And so they will have part of their lives where they won't have to worry about us.
Hmm.
So we are in a position as parents of wanting, if we want to be close to our kids, there are easy things we can do to take our ego out of the relationship and make it nicer.
Yeah. I have a dear relative, and when I call her, you know, I either have to put aside two hours or I have to say, I have to make the call at a point where I have to say, we have to leave the house, you know, to go to meet friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we're meeting them at the restaurant in half an hour.
Right.
And then that works too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, but that's, you know, I mean, that is a wonderful solution. It puts a limit, but it doesn't, and it doesn't make you say, I got to go now, or I got to go.
I got to go. It's only been an hour and 45 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, no.
Right, but all of those, but what you have done, what you just told me is an example of the million small ways you can think up to make it easier. When I talk about people getting, the generations getting closer, I am not thinking of a family meeting that's going to go on for 3 days and we're going to solve everything.
Oh.
I'm thinking of an occasional phone call.
Yeah.
And a bit of kindness and an expression of love that just makes people's shoulders relax. You know?
Yeah.
And the warmth come on their, let them feel a little warm.
Yeah.
And loved.
Yeah. Well, we haven't talked about grandchildren.
Yeah.
The arrival of grandchildren, momentous.
Momentous and grand.
And grandparents want to be there.
Yeah.
But young families can be very busy. How are the people you met through the book working that out?
You know, everybody works it out. I think over time is how they work it out. I just had this experience last week. I got a new grandchild, and I was taking her older brother, while his mom was in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I dropped him off at the hospital the next day. I saw the baby. It was great, and they thanked me for all my help, and I didn't hear from them for 4 days, and I thought I had done something wrong. Well, it turned out they were busy at bringing the baby home, and when my grandson caught his breath, he called and said, Grandma, can I come over? And it was fine.
Mm.
But there's a whole lot of eggshell walking. The most important thing parents can do is remember how hard it was for them when the new baby came home and how tired they were when they were raising the kids. And to cut their grown children some slack in how they're raising the babies. Child-rearing practices change. Science, you know, 1 year it's they can have candy, 1 year it's no candy, and so on and so on. The grandparents often feel judged when they see their kids treating their children differently from the way they were raised, and that's a source of a lot of tension. But then again, there's always and ever there'll be something you see one of your kids doing just the way you did it, and then you realize that you weren't all wrong. And about the things where you see your grandchildren being raised in just the wrong way, a woman at a lecture 2 days ago said, they're ruining my grandchildren because they're not using any discipline. And I said, did you raise them with discipline? She said, absolutely. I said, well, their children, your grandchildren's children will probably be raised very strictly because every generation does it opposite.
Yeah. That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other issue I think that's very important for mothers of sons is the daughter-in-law is very, very important.
Mm.
And she holds the keys to the door to the grandchildren.
Yeah.
And you just need to know that. It's really important, I think, for the long run for parents to really find a way to get close to and to love their children's spouses.
Yeah.
And I, you know, even if everything seems wrong, at least you know he or she loves your kid. And that's a place to begin. And you really need to find a way to find the strength, even if you disapprove of some of the decisions that have been made.
Yeah, I got to let it go. Here, last question. What did people tell you about what they'd like to change in their relationships with in-laws?
With in-laws?
Yeah.
That they would like the in-laws to get off their backs. Because if there's tension between a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law or a son-in-law and a mother-in-law, father-in-law, it puts the kid on the spot. You don't want to make your husband or wife choose between you and the mother or the father. So what they really want is peace in our time.
Yeah. Well, here's a place where you can let the children maybe lead the way.
Yeah.
because I remember so much enjoying my grandparents, and it was wonderful for my parents. I think that there was some tension there between the in-laws, but the wonderful thing was it was such a wonderful time for my grandparents. They were sort of present, but they didn't have to do it on a daily basis.
Oh, yes.
And also, they were much less tense than my parents were. You know, they were more free with us.
Well, that's great. I think that being a grandparent is well, somebody said it's if being a grandparent is your reward for not having killed your children when they were teenagers.
And it really
grandchildren can so often heal the wounds in a family because they're just all love.
Yeah.
And they don't know the history of who said what to whom 10 years ago. And people really, grandparents have a very hard time concealing their love for their grandchildren.
Yeah.
So it works. Sometimes it changes the temper of the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if somebody's remarried late in life and the grown children don't much care for the new spouse, my father's wife or my mother's husband.
Yeah.
And, But the new baby doesn't know who is who.
Sure.
And loves them all.
Yeah. There, we've got to end it. We're out of time. Jane, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Jane Isay is the author of Walking on Eggshells, Navigating the Delicate Relationship Between Adult Children and Parents. The book is available in paperback from Flying Dolphin Press, a division of Broadway Books. And the website's www.janeisay.com, and that's I-S-A-Y, or at the website www.walkingoneggshellsbook.com.